This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi everyone, how you going? It's Nelly here. Happy New Year to you. Don't know where that came from. Hey, we at the Dear Nelly team hope 2024 is full of love and adventure and rest and all the things, whatever that looks like for you. And thank you again for your continued support for this funny little podcast. Now, we've got some very exciting news. We have another live show coming up. This one is on Thursday, the 8th of February at the Malthouse Outdoors at the iconic Malthouse Theatre in Melbourne as part of their annual podcast season where they showcase the best podcasts around. I am thrilled to confirm that the lineup includes me, obviously, hosting. We also have comedian, author, and broadcaster Sammy Shah. Jesus, he's funny. He's so great on radio. He's so great at all the things. Some of you may know him from The Australian Story on ABC, which featured the incredible tale of him and his now wife, academic Kylie Moore Gilbert, who was sentenced to 10 years in an Iranian prison, but thankfully made it home. What a love story. We also have comedian and Dear Nelly favourite, the incomparable Kirsty Wiebeck, who also happens to be one of my strawberriest of strawberry friends, and I know you all adore her. And last but not least, oh my God, we have comedian and actor Lizzie Hu. Lizzie bloody Hu. She's on all the comedy specials, on all the streaming services, and no doubt she's one of the hottest bloody comedians going around. Now, I mean hot as in popular, but you know, you go with whatever. So look, I urge you to get in and book tickets via the Malthouse website or my website at nellythomas.com. And of course, there are links in the show notes. Couple of other quick reminders, keep your calls coming. If you can, join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month for bonus episodes and other rewards. This year, paid subscribers will get live Zoom events with me throughout the year where we can do Q&As and interact. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. Last but not least, some things don't change, Moles. This is a sex, dating, and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shit, so off your fuck.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start again, dear Nelly. Won't you hear my request, dear Nelly? Fabulous guest, dear Nelly. Won't you tell me what you think I should do?
Welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And we are joined today by one of my strawberriest of strawberry friends. It is the one and only Kirsty Wiebeck, back for sloppy seconds.
Sloppy seconds. Hello, mate. I'm assuming I'm not your strawberry friend because of my complexion.
No, you're my strawberry friend because I love and adore you and I know that you'll get back to me. So our listeners will know. I think I've told you this theory. I heard this a couple of years ago. Actually, it's probably 4 or 5, and I've really implemented it, where this woman basically said, go through your phone, and any friend that is like really reliable, that really sees you for who you are, that you love, that there's a reciprocity in the relationship, just put a strawberry next to their name. And other friends, it doesn't mean you have to drop other friends, but you prioritize getting back to your strawberry friends. Like, rather than sort of trying to, you know, we've all got those friends that you got to kind of drag to the table who, you know, are sort of, they love you, but they're reluctant or what, I don't know what it is. Whereas a strawberry friend's like, yes, let's go. So it's just that little
Let's go.
reminder. Yeah.
It's I love that. And it was just the timing thing because one of my neighbors told me yesterday that my cheeks look like strawberries.
Oh.
Which is so odd. Like that's such it yeah, I mean it's just such a strange thing to say. Like
It is a very
people have said
strange thing to say.
apples before, like also but strawberries?
Yeah.
I'm like, how does a cheek look like a strawberry? But anyway, it's just been on my mind. So
Yeah. No.
I like the real reason why you called me
I
that.
mean it in the sense that you're a giver and you are a very, very good friend to me.
Right back at you.
Yeah. So let's do a recap. Well, first of all, I want to mention that you are going to be in our next live show, which I'm very excited about.
Me too.
So that's going to be on, oh, tell me if I get this wrong, the 9th of February at the Malthouse Theatre.
Don't
It's a
subcontract that to me. I've got no idea.
it's in the show
It's
notes,
in
in the
my
show
calendar.
notes. So it'll be me hosting, and a panel will consist of you, Sammy Shah, and Lizzie Hu, and I am beside myself with excitement. It's going to be so great.
It will be super fun. I love those two as well.
And following up from that, let's do this up top. You'll be, I mean, I'm in Melbourne, so I'm Melbourne centric. You'll be at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, but you're all over the place. Where are you going?
I am biggest tour ever this year. So I'll be in Canberra, then Melbourne, Sydney, Auckland. So
Yes.
New Zealand Comedy Festival for the first time. I'm going to be in Warrnambool, obviously.
Right. I love the bull.
Brisbane. I love the bull as well. That's why I'm going. It just feel people are just like
Yeah.
Warrnambool. Like
Love it.
I love it. Off I go. So then, yeah, Brisbane, Cairns, Newcastle, and some other Hobart and Launceston. I
Amazing.
can't. Oh, and Perth. I just announced
And
the Perth
Perth.
show as well. So all over the shop, and I'm probably going to add some more places on as well, but that's way more locations than I usually do, so I'm super excited.
So that means we should all have the opportunity to see Kirsty Wiebeck this year. I will put links into the show notes and I'll put it on our social media as well. What's your show called?
It's called I'll Be the Judge of That. And also, I should say,
I can
it's
only, when I read that, I can only hear it in your tone. Well, I'll be the
yeah.
judge of that.
Yeah, I'll be the judge of that.
Thank you very
I
much.
should say too, Nelly, that I came on Dear Nelly before my 2023 tour,
Yes.
and I had so many of your listeners come out to shows.
You know why?
And
Because they love
why?
you. They love
Well,
you
they're
as
so
much as I do.
they were all so beautiful, Nelly.
Yeah.
I had people that waited after shows to say that they'd heard me on Dear Nelly, and then
Yeah.
they'd book tickets and they'd never heard of me before, and they had such a great time. And I got all these DMs and like all of the loveliest messages that I got on the back of my tour this year.
Yeah.
At some stage they mentioned that they came to me through Dear Nelly. So that's
I
pretty cool.
love
That's
that. I love
special.
that. You know what? I think the audience, it's such a beautiful audience, but also I think that they pick up, like when they can feel that I love someone, that affects them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
So, you
sure.
know, they love me, so they love you vicariously, and now they just love you. And it's like a big
Yeah,
circle of love. And of course, they will come out again, and I'll be at your show in Melbourne at the very least, if not the others. So we love you.
thanks, mate.
Now, quick recap of your first episode. Well, why don't you give us a recap? Give us a recap of your relationship history in 30 seconds.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Relationship history, long-term relationship in my 20s, came out of it in my late 20s. dated with gay abandon,
yep.
quite literally and figuratively.
Yep.
in my 30s, a bunch of short-term relationships.
Yeah.
Kept dating the wrong kind of people. Yep. Went to therapy. Worked out why. Worked out how to crack that.
Yeah.
And I've been with my partner for very nearly 6 years.
Yes, and you're an engaged lady.
We're engaged, yep, that's right, yeah. So, we met when I was transitioning to being a full-time comedian. So I quit my full-time day job, realised I didn't have nearly enough work to survive off as a comic yet. So took a casual job in a hospital, just doing admin on the front desk, and that's where I met Elle, who is an oncology nurse.
Yeah, you met at work.
Yeah, an office romance.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And I think one of the things I love, and I think one of the reasons your episode, and go back and listen if you haven't listened to it already, one of the reasons that resonated so much is because it was really clear going through your journey how important it was when to break that pattern of choosing the wrong people, how critical it was to get into therapy and do that self-reflection and then work out why you were ending up in relationships that didn't suit you or weren't the right fit. And that's not to
Or how to break it. Or how to break it, I think the thing was. I think the most annoying thing for me was that intellectually I understood why.
Oh, 100%, yes.
Like I could sit there and I could tell my mates why I kept choosing the wrong person.
Yes.
But I was like, I can't change it though.
Yes.
That's who I'm attracted to.
Yes.
So, and I remember when I rocked up to therapy saying that to them, I was like, I don't need you to tell me why.
Yeah.
And I told them, I was like, these are the reasons why I keep choosing these people. Yeah. But I was like, I don't want to choose them, but I need to know how to create new neural pathways.
Yes.
which is what it was. Like I had to untrain
my
brain.
This is a critical thing because I think you and I have talked about this off mic and I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before. Even though I'm a massive advocate of therapy, I do also think you got to think about whether or not the therapy is leading to a change in behavior. Because you can be in the wrong therapy where you get all this insight and you do excavation and you understand why you're doing certain things, but there's no change.
Yeah. Right?
Because, and if you're a clever person, you can understand something, but are you feeling it? And are you doing something different? So like you say, what if you've got a repeated habit of choosing a kind of person or a kind of personality that you know is not good for you, and even though you know intellectually why, you keep doing it?
Yeah.
Then
yeah, how do
therapist.
I break that? Yeah, 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 that's exactly right. I mean, one of my worst dating experiences with someone who was essentially a pathological liar.
Mm.
And
oh, I remember.
Yeah, like she couldn't, like if I asked her what she had for lunch, she'd tell me she had a salad sandwich.
Mm.
And she really had a quiche from the cafe downstairs.
Yeah.
So
why?
And I was like, why can't you just tell the truth? Like a lot of it was not of consequence, but then some of it really, really was.
Yeah.
And she was incredibly intelligent and could speak to you in academic terms about some of her shortcomings, if you will. I don't know if shortcomings is the best word, but she had some level of insight into her idiosyncrasies. And she'd talk about them academically and through, you know, therapy speak to you. And you'd be like, you're kind of hovering above your body, though. Like, you've got this surface level insight, but you can't change. It's almost like that thing which you see, it's fairly prevalent in internet culture where people are like, I do this really messed up thing. Like, lol, cute. How cute am I? Lol. Yeah. I'll never change.
Yes.
And, like, you know, I remember a friend of mine a few years ago who's, like, well into their 40s saying at a party once, like, I take drugs and drink too much to mask, you know, whatever it was. Then I'm having a really terrible time or whatever. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, but they were correct. That is exactly what they were doing. But everybody was like, oh, she's so quirky. And it's like,
do you know what that is?
It's
that
not enough is, just to say that, like,
yeah. And it's, to me, it's even worse. Like an example, and I obviously I'll anonymize it, but I had a couple of friends do something pretty shitty to me and leave me in a really difficult position. And the same thing, got that text going, oh, we're such bitches. We're such bitches. Ah, ha, ha, ha. Yes, you are bitches. Like, actually, can you just go, we're really sorry. We had to do this thing. How can we make it right? Or we made a bad decision or what? Like that kind of coquettish, ah, ha, 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 aren't I a loose unit? Yeah, well, fuck off. Like, because either way, it left me in the shit.
It's a really strange part of our culture. Like, I know what you're talking about, and I have a like a situation on a lesser scale.
Yeah.
But it was a situation in which if I'd been the offender, I just would have gone to the other person and been like, look, what I did really sucked.
Sorry.
And I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
And because people are so terrible at apologising.
Yes.
And it does my head in because I'm like incredibly impulsive. Which meant that, which I, you know, I'm aware of and I work on all the time. I'm constantly working on it. But if you're an impulsive person, something that you need to learn really early on is how to apologize.
Yes, properly.
Yes, properly, sincerely. Yeah. And so, and this is the thing is that, and I never do anything terrible. It's more not thinking before I speak or whatever. But I'll go away and I'll be like, oh, no, Kirsty, like, why didn't you take a beat and not say that thing? Like, and I'll go away and I'll be like, and you know, I'll have a think about it and I'll go back to the person and I'll be like, hey, I was out of line. I'm really sorry. What you said did annoy me, but I should have taken a breath and I could have pitched it in a better way than that, you know? And I'll be very, very good at delivering a sincere apology. But I find a lot of people I know, and it's probably not just the people that I know, but they have a real hard time. And it's this like, I'm the worst.
Yeah, this is so, this to me is the key. What I'm picking up in your situation and in mine, and I think this happens a lot in dating as well, of to me kind of going, I'm the worst, or oh my God, I'm such a bitch, or I'm so out of control, or da da. What they're actually trying to do is manage your emotional response. They're saying, you can't respond to this with anger, sadness, disappointment, because I'm saying it. And that's the bit I don't like. It's like, do not tell me how I can feel about a situation.
My
feelings will be like, my feelings.
Yeah. And you could just short circuit all of that by just being like, hey, I screwed up and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because that's a bit that enrages me. Like I'm very forgiving. Again, same. You have to be forgiving if you're someone who makes mistakes all the time too.
Yeah.
But it's just in my nature. Like if we all screw up. I screw up all the time.
Totally.
I'll apologize to you. You'll apologize to me and the friendship will keep rolling.
Yeah.
But the friendship can't keep rolling for me when somebody just repeatedly comes to me and goes, oh my God, what I did. Wow. Who even am I?
Yeah.
And I'm like, just say the word.
Yeah.
Just say sorry.
Sorry.
Like don't just tell me how cute you are. So it's just this bizarre, but I don't know. And it's one of those things like, I fixate on it a bit as well. Like once I realise that people are doing stuff like that, you know, it's that confirmation bias thing.
Oh,
like
when you notice
there's lots of Teslas around, you start seeing them everywhere.
But I think you're right. I think it is actually the downside. There's a lot of upsides to how much more literate we are with therapy speak, but that's one of the downsides, is that people can use the language of therapy without implementing it.
Yeah, because, I mean, the basic idea of therapy would be, like, go and apologise.
Correct.
Like, it would be so basic. Like, yes, you've upset your friend and you did something terrible.
And
don't
do
bring
change?
Them and say I'm the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you show them that you know that, like, you know what you're apologising for?
Yeah, that's right.
Which is something, you know, that I'm always really conscious of is making the other person aware. Like, I'm really sorry, Nelly, that I hurt your feelings by, you know, saying that terrible thing in the heat of the moment. I should have taken a breath and I didn't mean it. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, sorry about Saturday.
Yeah.
Like,
Or worse, I used to do years ago, used to do a joke about, remember when Howard wouldn't apologize for the stolen generation? I'm like, it's like parents of my parents' generation, whenever they say sorry, it's like, sorry, you know? Well, no, that's actually not an apology. You know, like that is what we call sarcasm. And you know, if you put it in this context, like this is shit to, I mean, I think dating is friendship with sex on a basic level, right? It's the base of its friendship. And obviously it's got to be more than that. There's got to be some kind of romantic element to it as well. But the rules are pretty similar. The guidelines are pretty similar. If you're dating someone who can never apologize, or who is trying to be manipulative in that sort of way of kind of going, this is just me, like take it or leave it, then fucking leave it.
Yeah.
It's not cool. And that doesn't mean they need to change their whole personality, but if they can't own their shit, you can't work with that.
No.
You know, there has to be a willingness for both people to kind of go, like you say, if you and I are dating and I hurt your feelings, I need to be able to sit with that. Instead of making it about me or dismissing you.
Yeah,
go, all
absolutely.
Right, how can we work this out?
Yeah.
And how can I not do it again? If you love someone, you don't want to hurt them. You know, it's kind of basic. It's very complicated, but it's also basic. Someone who's going, oh, well, you know that classic thing, well, you're too sensitive.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then maybe I'm too sensitive for you. Let's keep it simple. Yeah. See you later.
Yeah. Because this is how I'm feeling. Like, and my feelings are valid as well. So if you can't meet me in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, maybe I am too sensitive. I'm not even going to argue with you. Catch ya.
Yeah.
Now, being sloppy seconds, my dear friend, you get to ask me a question. Is there something you would like to know from the Nelly Thomas universe that you don't already know?
Yeah, I'm going to dig out the dirt. You know, we've been talking about this a little bit in a cursory fashion, but it's, you know, been the holiday period and all sorts of things have been going on for us. So I saw a hard launch on social media the other day. I saw some images being bandied around on Dear Nelly's Instagram.
Yes.
And I want to dig out the dirt on what's going on with your current lover.
Oh, I knew you'd fucking ask this. I'm blushing already. God. So, well, the short story is that, you know, I'm always in that thing of kind of like how much information, you know, like you do. I'm very conscious of Linda's privacy, so I'm just kind of editing in my head. But the short story is after we went through this horrible period with our beautiful friend Cal.
Mm-hmm.
And when she passed away, like before that, I really was, I kind of felt like I was done. And, you know, I had talked to you about that. It's like, I feel like I keep choosing wrong and all the stuff that you and I had talked about where the same place that you had been in some years before, I was feeling really despondent. If I'm totally honest, I was feeling like damaged goods. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's at its worst. And I wasn't there all the time. But I just sort of thought, I can't go back in. I'd had a bit of a rough experience, you know, dating recently. And yeah, anyway, I just was not in a good place. And after Cal passed away, I think I thought a couple of things. One, it's as the reminder, like when you lose anyone that you love, that you could go at any time yourself. It's a reminder of your own mortality.
Absolutely.
But also I think on a bigger level for me, it was that basic thing, the fundamental basis of my friendship with Cal was, from my point of view, was that she was really proud of me.
Yeah, and she absolutely was.
So I think that kind of saying that out loud and talking about that and reflecting on it, I don't know, it unlocked something in me where I went, no, you are. Like, this is very kind of woo-woo, but it's the truth. You are worthy, right? And there's someone for you. So I thought, fuck it, I'm going back on the apps, Weebex. I'm going back on the apps.
Yeah.
And I thought, I want to do this with a very different intention and really look for different things than I have looked for before. And the way that I would summarize that in the shorthand is, I think I'm really used to the way I exist in the world, which is not even a virtue because it can certainly be negative for both parties, but I'm a giver. I'm a nurturer. Sometimes that's been bad and pathological. It can be me. There's some kind of wound in me that's trying to make people love me. So I can overgive. And I thought, I need a giver. I need to be nurtured and taken care of and be the one, not that it's not reciprocal, but to make sure that there's someone looking out for me as well, who's reading the room for me and not just the other way around. And lo and behold, the short story is that the first person I matched with was Linda, who you saw on Instagram. She said her love language was cheese. A, I love cheese, but B, that's funny. Like if someone's funny, I'm like, yes, I'm interested, especially on a profile, because that can be difficult. And if I want to get, pardon the pun, really cheesy, she just had a really lovely smile. And I was like, I like that warmth. Like, I need that kind of warmth as well. Like, I think I have had a tendency in the past to go for a little bit like cool people. And I don't, and I mean cool, like they're cool in an edgy sense, but also cool as in potentially a bit cold. Not universally, and everyone I've dated, but just as a vibe. Like, I like that kind of cool intellectual thing, and it doesn't serve me. I liked the warmth. And then I think the reason it's gone well is because, well, for lots of reasons, but one of them is just little things like, oh, I'm available Friday night, and then Linda will book something and go, okay, I've booked this at 6 o'clock and I'll see you there. That probably doesn't sound like much, but to me it is.
No, that is to me as well. I mean, because I've always been the organizer and all of that stuff. So if somebody takes charge, it's like, wow.
Takes a bit of initiative and show and is thoughtful about it. So you've said you like this, I don't know, you like Vietnamese, I've booked us a Vietnamese place at 6 o'clock on Dad. Like, actually listening. I mean, there are a couple of moments, this is like, I think for especially for single mums, this is weak at the knees kind of stuff. She's like, she was coming over and she's like, I'll bring dinner. I'm like, oh, I should book you, I should make you dinner. And she's like, no, you've got enough mental load. Like, even for someone to kind of recognize mental load as a bloody concept, I'm like, oh my God, I like you. I mean, there's lots of other things that I like as well. There's a lot of compatibility, I think, is a really big part of it. She can be really daggy and fun, which I really like. But I think for me, it's mainly like she's definitely, it's very challenging actually, way back, because the way she is with me is the way I usually am with everyone else. So that kind of like organizing, nurturing, taking care of, generous. And I will confess, I am finding it hard at times to receive.
I've got no doubt.
Like, and
It's
I'm,
unnatural. You've been in that role for such a long period of time.
it's
Even if
so,
you want
yeah.
it's a different thing being able to just sit back and receive it.
It really is. And I found that fascinating. Speaking of, therapy and insight and all that kind of stuff, when you think you've got all the insight into that, and then someone shows up, like, I won't say what it was, but she did a particularly generous thing. And it kind of upset me so much. Like, I loved it, but it also challenged me so much that I actually had to ring my therapist. And she pretty much said, but this is what you asked for. Right? This is everything you have asked for. So let's work out why you're uncomfortable rather than going, I don't want that. And that, you know what? I think relationships, parenting, friendships, but romantic relationships especially, really show you the bits of you that aren't healed. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
Yeah, they do. Like, they
I'm
make you
going through
accountable.
that in real time.
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it? And also, like, we're just a constant work in progress, aren't we?
Oh,
It's Like when you think that you've gotten on top of things, it's like something else pops up and you're like, wow, where'd that come from? What's that about?
Well, like I said, so it was a lovely act of generosity, and I thought, this is what I've asked for. I want to be seen. I want to be taken care of. I want to receive all the things that I give. It's exact. This particular gesture was exactly the kind of thing that I would do, you know, for a friend or a partner or my children or whatever. But it just, I'm just so unused to it. And it taps some part of you that goes, I'm not worthy, or so I don't feel right. I'm not used to this. I mean, I've gotten through it and I've accepted the gesture. But I think it's important for me to acknowledge to listeners, like, I'm no different to them, you know, like I'm also that work in progress.
Oh, totally. Yeah, we all are. Because it's interesting how the human brain has a propensity to place all the blame and, I guess all the blame onto yourself.
Yeah.
For things like it manages to twist everything negatively onto you. So it's like when you're shining a light on something, like understanding a need that you have or a want, like to have somebody that cares for you in a different way to previous partners, like your brain will just say to you, well, how come none of your previous partners ever looked after you like this?
Yeah.
And then your brain just interprets it as like you not being worthy or whatever, rather than it being like you've just been drawn to these people in the past who haven't had a natural capacity to do that for anyone, not just you. But then you've got to unpick all of that, like especially when you're in your 40s or your 50s and
there's
it's
a lot
amazing
of
what can be hidden for decades.
Yeah, 100%. And I find myself kind of, there's been times I've gone, it's almost that thing of, oh, this is too good to be true. You know, like there's a suspicion. Like I think I'm a naturally optimistic person, but I have found there's a couple of moments when Linda has done really lovely things where I've kind of gone, oh, you're going to stop. Like, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I'll be honest, you're going to stop doing this soon. Or there'll be a point at which you won't.
Yeah, I understand why you'd feel embarrassed to admit that, but that is also just so normal. Anyone who's receiving something differently to what they have in the past, like it's impossible not to feel suspicious because you haven't been exposed to different behaviour than the behaviour that you consistently have been exposed to from different people over a long period of time.
Yeah.
Like if every single other situation has panned out to this result here, it's impossible not to assume that your current circumstances are also going to end up skewing that way too.
Oh.
Which is the whole thing with dating and having to let yourself, like you've got to lend yourself to the whole thing, don't you? You've got to try and keep your mind open to it. Mm. And you've got to, you know, you've got to take people at face value. Because we are trained into that.
Yeah, we are. And I think that is also, that is very much a two-way street. So one of the things I've noticed that I think gives us a really good chance, I hope, is that when either of us, and I'll just, for me, because it's privacy, I'll just talk about myself. If I go to her and kind of go, actually, like I'm spiraling about this, I'm not met with, oh, well, don't be stupid or don't be sensitive or I didn't say that or I didn't. She will then go, oh, what happened? You know, like, for example, if I have this constant thing that I shouldn't be needy and that's from childhood and, you know, say to her, oh, am I asking you too much? Because I'd asked her to help me with a couple of things. She's like, babe, you're not asking me enough. Like, I'm not even close to you're asking too much. But I am so programmed to think that I need too much that even asking for basic stuff from a partner feels a lot.
Mm.
But to have her meet me in that space instead of dismissing it and kind of going, that's silly, just to reassure and kind of go, okay, now I understand that. I will talk about it in a different way and let me reassure you that I don't, we're not even close to how much I'm prepared and happy to give. You know, and I need that reassurance repeatedly, not
Yeah,
once,
sure.
you know, repeatedly. And someone, and I will offer that too. But I think to know that you need that, it's not enough. They also need to accept that you need that.
Yeah, sure.
If
Yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like I'm 50 this year and I feel like a little teenager. Like it's one of those ones where you're kind of like, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And you know what? On my but I've been talking about the negatives. On the base level, I'm like, fuck, I deserve this. You
You
know?
do.
Like also kind of leaning into that and kind of going, yes, this is how it's supposed to be.
When I was younger and dating, like I'd go through these patches where I'd be like, right, this is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't find it for ages. And then I'd be like, am I being too rigid?
Yeah.
And now, like in my infinite wisdom as a 41-year-old, I look back on those things that I was seeking, and they weren't outrageous
No.
at all. Like they were all very basic, positive attributes in a person. Like it, you know, there was, because you see on the internet every now and then people like writing their lists and they're like,
Yeah.
right, must have at least $150,000 in their savings account.
Oh.
And it, like, it was nothing disgusting like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
It was
yeah.
like, imagine bringing that up on the first date.
Yeah.
Like, so I've booked a restaurant, we're going to meet
Yeah.
here. Also, can you please bring your bank statements? I
What's your
want to make
life
sure you're not
insurance situation?
yeah, right.
Honestly,
Exactly. What
for
kind of car do
me,
you drive?
and it's hard even talking about the list because it doesn't mean that I judge people who don't comply with this list. It is literally just a compatibility issue. It's things like, are you punctual? Because if you're not punctual, I'm going to get stressed, right? Are you organized? Are you, I could not give a shit how much money you earn, but do you know how much money you earn? Do you know how much debt you've got? Do you manage it? You know, are you in control of your finances? I don't care what the number is. But if you're loosey goosey about it, like I just do not have the nervous system for that. And I mean, there's a whole range of other things to do with, I guess, romance and sex and how you are together and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's okay to have criteria like that that you wouldn't apply to a friend, for example. It's okay. You have to have compatibility to be able to have a partnership.
Well, yeah, because that's right, because it's going to be a partnership, right?
Yeah, at
Like
some
they,
point.
yeah, yeah. If I mean, if that's the kind of relationship that you're
Yeah.
chasing,
Yes.
then yeah, you're looking to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to one to two coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Compatibility on a partnership level as opposed to, on a friend level, like it has no impact on you what's going on with my finances.
No,
Like we
and
can still go and have a
honestly,
coffee, but
yeah.
and be mates. But if we're in a relationship and
Yeah.
then later on you found out that I'm in $100,000 of debt that
Ah.
I'm really struggling to pay off,
Yeah.
that's not necessarily a deal breaker for
No.
somebody, but you can go in being like, okay, well, this is going to be like an emotional and a financial stress on us in some ways. How are we going to manage that? And like, yeah, you've got to be aware of it all and
Yeah.
able to tackle it or to decide if it is something that you would be compatible with.
You got to be
But
adulting. You know, I think that's the thing. It's not, and again, that's not about existing in the world in a particular way. It's about knowing that you exist in a world in a particular way. For me,
sure.
Like, I don't mind if you've got shit, as long as you know what that shit is and you are taking responsibility for it. And I think that,
yeah, I really like that. I really like that because I was trying to think of a way to articulate that because we've all got things in our lives that other people would be like, not for me. Like, I can't believe they're managing that thing that way or whatever.
Yeah.
Or I can't believe their circumstances or that's the job they do or.
Mm.
You know, whatever it is, like if you were going to, you know, be incredibly judgmental for a minute, like there's plenty of things that people would look around at for all of us and cast judgment on, you know, but I really like that, how you've articulated it in, you just want someone to be aware of their situation.
All right, I'm going to move us on. Are you ready for a listener call, my friend?
I'm ready. I'm so ready.
Hi, Nelly. This is Jude, one of your listeners from the UK. I've been listening to you firstly on Single Life of Us and now on Dear Nelly, and I love the podcasts. I feel like you've held my hand throughout my journey from making the extremely tough decision to split from my husband of 26 years, then telling my teenage boys and then navigating life as a single woman again. The various reasons my ex only moved out of the house at Easter this year. It was horrendous sharing a house with him for nearly a year after telling him I wanted to split up. Anyway, it was such a relief when he left and I could start to create my new life. I really went for it, trying new hobbies, joining meetup and Facebook groups and going on holiday solo. I was really pushing myself out of my comfort zone. I had to do so many things by myself as all of my other friends were married. I also jumped on the apps and boy, did I have a good time. It turns out that I did love sex, just not with my ex. I came from a really strict Catholic upbringing and so I had to learn so much more about sex and female pleasure. Initially, my dating was primarily seeking partners to explore with rather than for any sort of relationship. I never did a one-night stand because that wasn't really my scene, but I chose guys who were open or in an ENM relationships to play with. I never really met them on a regular basis, just, you know, once a month or something like that. Then I met a guy who I've been seeing since September on a regular basis, probably once a week, and it's not just for sex. We sort of go out and I suppose we date, yeah. At the beginning, we both said we weren't looking for a long-term partner, and that's still true because I don't want to give up all the freedom that I've only just got back, if you like. But I have to admit that I'm starting to get feelings for him. I have discussed it with him, and he says that he likes me and enjoys my company but isn't looking for anything more. And I understand that. He was never offering it that at the beginning, and he's always been truthful with me. He lives in London, which is about 2 hours away from me, has two young children who he sees every other weekend and a busy job. Ideally, I would like to be able to see him more than once a week when he comes up to my area for work. But I'm wondering if partly that is because I'm starting to come down from the general high of my ex leaving me. I'm starting to feel a bit lonely in general. So it might be that I'm sort of trying to fill that void with him. Lots of people that I've talked to are saying that I should finish it as I will get hurt, but I'm really reluctant because I'm learning so much about communication and relationships from him. He's really emotionally intelligent. I always struggled to communicate with my ex. He would always shut me down and wouldn't want to talk about things. So it's been really good to be able to talk to him about things and, you know, to really open up and be vulnerable. So my question is, how do you have a relationship with someone when you know that it's not going to be forever? I mean, I suppose you never know that a relationship's going to be forever anyway, but There are so many resources available giving advice for standard long-term relationships, but not for a more modern version. So, any advice, Nelly? What would you recommend? Cut my losses and stop seeing him now before I get hurt, or carry on and enjoy the time that I have him and carry on, I suppose, learning from him. Anyway, keep up the good work. I love your podcasts. Thanks, Nelly. Bye.
Kirsty Wayback, I couldn't love this bitch more.
I was about to say, I love her so much.
I love her so much. She's doing all the right things, all the hard things. Tell me what you hear. I've got like a trillion thoughts, but I want to know what do you hear?
I've got a trillion thoughts as well. I mean, the big red flag for me is her saying, you know, do I stick around until I get hurt?
Yeah.
Like, already acknowledging that that's the inevitable.
It's coming.
And just in that really simple sentence, like acknowledging that you're well aware that you're already in a position emotionally where when it comes to an end, it's going to hurt. And it also sounds like that, when it comes to an end, not if it comes to an end. And that's the big difference. Like, you know, she, you know, very sagely at the end said, not that any relationship that you get into, you know, is going to last forever. But there's a hope that it will.
Yes.
And you know you're working towards that. So I think if I were in this situation, I think I'd ask myself really, really honestly if I thought that any good could come of me just sticking around and waiting until the heartbreak.
Yeah.
Basically. And it's a very personal thing. So for me, I know that wouldn't work. Like if I'd started developing feelings for somebody, like I know that that wouldn't work. Whereas if I were just out there and I was single and I committed to just having like a summer of fun, like just dipping a toe in, it's very different, because the way that you approach those kinds of periods in your life is very different. Like you don't develop an emotional attachment with people. Like you spend less time with them. Like you know, you make it really clear really early on that it might be like a no strings attached kind of thing. And that's what it is. It's like going over to each other's houses at 10 o'clock at night and whatever. Like, you know, you're really whining and dining and going to the cinema and introducing them around to your friends and that kind of thing.
Which is more so, relationships vibes.
So, I mean, that's the thing, is that you've got to know what you're getting yourself into and whether that's what you want to be into. I think. And so for me, there are a million red flags in what she was saying which would make me go, it sounds like you already know what the answer is. Like it sounds that you know that you should probably bail before you're in over your head and the pain is insurmountable. And then maybe you just have to have a little think about, like, you know, whether it is that you're out looking for a long-term relationship again now. Like, if that's
what it is
for.
You're after.
Let me put and if a that's the case, this isn't it.
I'll put a couple of things to you and see what you reckon. I find this one fascinating because I absolutely love her and I think she's done everything, you know, that, and I'm saying this in air quotes, but everything you should do. You know, she's been really upfront and honest. But as I've said many times before, fucking feelings, you know, like this is always the risk with casual or open relationships or E&M or whatever. You don't, or you can go in with the best of intentions, both of you. And as she said, he hasn't lied. She hasn't lied. They've both been upfront, but you cannot control for the human experience. And there is some level at which she is unexpectedly developing feelings for him.
Yes.
What I want to put to you, though, Kirsty, and see whether you think this is nutty nut bar, I reckon either way she's going to be hurt. She's already in, right? She's already invested. So there's part of me kind of going, can you just, yes, you know there's a heartbreak coming, but that heartbreak could be now or in 6 months. Can you offset that heartbreak a little bit by putting some contingencies in place, seeing him still, but limiting it to absolutely no more than once a week? I think she mentioned that, you know, maybe she'd like to see him more. Do not do that, because you're going to get in even deeper. And I wonder, should she take another lover?
Well, look, I think that that genuinely is probably what I would do.
This is what I think I would do. That's why I'm saying it. Like, yeah, honest balls to the wall.
Yeah. No, I think I would do that too. I think because you're right. Like, that way you're taking back a little bit of the control of the heartbreak.
Yeah.
You are. You're also diffusing some of it because you won't have all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're slowly putting a foot out the door.
Correct.
And then at a minimum, when it does draw to an end, you've got something else
You've got another option. And the brutal truth, because she's trying to, what I hear is a woman who's, you know, closer to my age, who's gone, all these scripts that I've had, this traditional kind of setup hasn't worked for me. I want to do something different. You are doing something different. I reckon let's take that one more step and kind of go, I reckon you can stay with this guy. It is going to hurt you. It is going to hurt you if it ends, but I think it's going to hurt you anyway. So let's offset that, get one or two, like one, and she won't mind me saying this. I remember when Helen Thorne had started dating and she'd come through a horrendous divorce and, you know, cheating and a whole range of horrible things. And for a while there, not now, but for a while there, she would have like two or three guys on the go. And not in a kind of, I mean, that can sound gross and pervy. That's not how I mean it. I mean it in the sense of her kind of going, I am not ready for a long-term commitment. But I think part of her thinking was, if I'm dating one guy at a time, I will fall for him. Like, I know how I'm built, right? So I will actually kind of counter that. And no one was lied to. Like, it was very clear and upfront with everybody. I think she can do the same. Get yourself another one or two.
Or four or five.
Or 10. I don't know how much time you've got. But do not put all your emotional eggs in this basket, because you've got to believe people when they tell you he is saying he can't do this. Believe him. Accept that.
Yeah, that's such a good, that's a really key point, Nelly. And something that it took me many years of dating quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
To get my head around, like, and it's a meme.
Yeah.
Like, I can change her or I can change him or whatever, like in any way. But this falls under that umbrella. Like, and we've all got friends going through it right now where they're talking to you and they're going, oh, yeah, like, you know, he says that he doesn't want another relationship, but I think that he'll eventually fall for me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen. You've got to believe people.
You've got to.
And at a minimum, it's for self-protection, but also they're telling you, just listen to them.
Yeah.
But absolutely. So that's a key factor. But I think you're right. I mean, I think it'd really cushion the fall. Like, and there's absolutely no reason to have all the eggs in one basket, especially when they've told you that they're what you're getting right now is it.
And he's not asking you to do that. And you don't have to do that, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Take the edge off. Take the edge off with another lover or two. And I mean that sincerely, and see how that goes. And if a few months down the track, like if I'm sure, you know, she doesn't seem to have any trouble meeting up with people via Tinder or wherever she's doing it. If a few months down the track, you're still feeling like I'm yearning to a degree that's debilitating, or I'm feeling heartbroken, then yeah, you'll have to cut it off with him. But I think there's somewhere in the middle now. Keep him on the go. You feel like you're having a great time. And I think even more importantly, you're learning stuff from him. You finally come across someone who is actually communicating with you, who listens, who's showing you what you deserve and should have, even if it's not with him. that will help you expect that in your next relationship.
Yeah.
And that's lovely. We can learn things from people we're only with for a short time, you know, and kind of go, oh, wow, this is what it's supposed to be like. She's obviously had an ex who, I think she used the word shut her down all the time. Even maybe if you want to get philosophical about it, has this man come into your life to show you that that's not right?
Yeah, I feel like that about people, like, quite frequently.
Mm.
Like, it's that whole, oh, gosh, I'm about to introduce a topic that I can't remember what the... You know when you start a story and then you realize that you can't remember the guts of the story? I've just done that. But you know that, like, people come into your lives for, like, a season.
Yeah.
Or a lifetime or whatever, like, but oh, God, but I've really cooked it, haven't I?
I know exactly what you mean. I do think, whether you think it's by fate or it's just a learning opportunity, some people can't, like, I have literally dated, you know, been on a couple of dates with people where I've gone, I've learned something from you. I've learned something from you about myself, or I've learned something from you in how you operate in the world, or how you exist in space, or how you talk to me, or any, and it doesn't have to be that they're your forever. It can be, I'm actually gathering these tools for if I do find a forever.
Yeah. It was like when I, you know, went to therapy about the people that I was attracted to or attracting. And throughout that process, I continued to date, and I dated some people that still fell under that category.
Yeah.
And I found myself not being attracted to it anymore.
Yes.
And that in itself was a major lesson. And, like, and I came away from those, like, rather than feeling like I'd wasted my time in any way or whatever, or feeling betrayed because they'd misrepresented themselves over text or whatever it was, I came away feeling really grateful that they had been, you know, that they'd come into my path to show me that I was making progress.
100%. I cannot agree with this more. So I'll give you a real world example, and I feel vulnerable saying this, but again, that's the nature of the podcast. The reason I am actually really optimistic about Linda is that when I am around her, my nervous system feels settled. I feel calm.
That's a huge sign.
Right? In a way that I haven't for a long time. And that to me is like, okay, this is what you've been working toward. Forget all the overthinking, forget all the, you know, analyses, the excavation, just trust your body. How do you feel? You feel calm in her presence? That means something.
Yeah.
And maybe this guy's teaching her that.
Yeah.
I feel listened to. I feel seen. He communicates with me, even when he's saying what I don't like, which is that I can't have the kind of relationship you want. You know where you stand. You're not being shut down. Now you know the next time you go into, whether it's casual or long-term, you know that that's a baseline.
Mm.
And you've got to experience that, not just think it.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I love this for her. Can you please call back and tell us how it's going? Because I want to know everything. Like, this feels like a rom-com situation. All right, we're going to finish, of course, you and I jibber-jabbered. We are going to finish on big mistake. So with all sloppy seconds, I ask, what is the biggest mistake that you see in dating and relationships, either that you've experienced or that you observe in others?
Okay, well, there's so many of them.
Do you want to give me three?
I'll give you just one. What I'm going to do whenever I have too many ideas about something, I'm like, what's the first thing that springs to mind?
Yeah.
So when you said the question, the first thing that sprang to mind for me was expecting to get everything you need from one person.
100%. Tell me more.
Okay. So I remember earlier this year, I had a great conversation with our dear friend Cal about this very topic.
Mm.
And it was, I feel like when I was younger, probably just by virtue of what we're sold by Hollywood or whatever while we're growing up, I feel like I thought you'd find your person and you know, they'd be the your other half.
I was just going to say, let's listen to the language. I'm going to find my twin flame, my other half. Yeah. They will complete me. And guess what that says unconsciously to all little kids? You are not complete.
You're not complete. Exactly. That's exactly right. And, I mean, it's still very much present in pop culture now, but probably to a slightly lesser extent or in a slightly different way to when we were growing up. But, yeah, it was that. It was like, and it's how people introduce their partners. Here's my other half. Like all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, you're a complete person, which is why there are so many people who are very happily thriving as single people.
Yes.
You know, there's a real groundswell in that culture now where you don't have to be attached. You don't have to be in a relationship. Mm. I've got plenty of friends who do not want to be in a relationship.
Same.
And they don't identify as asexual. That's, you know, that's a whole different thing. But they just don't have any interest in being in a relationship and have been happily living on their own for 20 years. And I love that. I love that because you don't need to be in a relationship if you don't want to be. That is true. But, you know, when I was in my 20s and stuff, I remember when I first started properly dating, being feeling helpless and like, and hopeless. I'll never meet, you know, the person who completes me and
the one
and finishes my sentences and is the one and all of that stuff. And I still see it in people now, and I see it in my friends now, where you know, they might be frustrated in their relationship or with their partner because they're not providing this thing to them that is of no consequence. It's not it's not a emotionally distant thing.
No.
It's not harmful. It's not harmful in any way. Yeah. Let's just throw an example out there. They're not interested in the same kinds of movies that my friend is, who likes to watch them and then talk about them at length for hours and hours and hours. That is not a deal breaker in a relationship.
Is this me?
But your partner doesn't have to be in the same kind of movies as you. You could find out that you enjoy going to watch them on your own, and then you enjoy reading internet forums on them. Yeah. You could get yourself into a Facebook group of like-minded people and go with them to the movies to watch those things and have dinner and a debrief after.
Can I give you an example? So, and this will, I was waiting for you to actually meet us in real life to drop this on you, but I'll do it now. Linda's like full on into sport.
Yeah, okay.
Right, we're talking.
I could tell. I can tell.
Like,
I can tell. Just by looking, looking at Linda, I was like, I can tell the ilk. I can tell the ilk.
She will get up at 3 a.m. to watch a bloody basketball game in the States. She'll do she'll sit for 5 days at a test match. And we're joking about it the other day, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be involved in any of that. But equally, I don't expect you to watch the Kardashians. I can do that on my own.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and that's a literal example. But I think, and I'll anonymize, but a mate of mine was saying, who started seeing someone recently, like, oh, they're not really my intellectual equal. They're not dumb, you know, or they're not like, you know, they're no slouch in the intellect department, but they're not quite at my kind of level. And I said to her, so what? Like, you've got friends who are at that level. You can't get everything from one person. You don't have to sit down and have, like, deep and meaningful academic or esoteric conversations every night with your partner or every day or at all, really, if you feel that need elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. It's a young person's trap to go, I'm looking for the perfect person. You're not fucking perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And your interests and what you're into and your beliefs and what you like to talk about aren't going to perfectly align for someone else as well.
No.
Like, there's a flip side to that. You can't date someone and be like, she's not interested when I talk for hours about that TV show. she's not the one for me.
Yes.
Because on the flip side of that is somebody going, oh, my God, she spoke to me for hours about that TV show. She's not the one for me. Like, yeah. You've got to find a middle ground. And I think, yeah, I've heard it a little bit lately, like people complaining about not getting that extra thing from the person that is very superficial. Mm.
Yeah,
it's not like, oh, I'm going through a hard time and my partner always shoots me down and won't listen to how I'm feeling. It's not that. That's a whole different ballgame.
Mm.
Like that kind of thing is that's a problem. But your friend, your partner not wanting to go to the test cricket with you.
Yeah. So what?
You don't need to break up over that.
No.
That's totally fine. Like you can go and go for a walk on the beach with your friends or whatever it is that you like to do. Well, your partner's off doing that thing.
And to flip it, Kirsten, I think, and you know I've done this and I presume you've done it as well, you can have that person who on paper where you go, right, they look the way that I like, they dress the way that I like, they have similar interests to me, they have, you know, whatever the things are that we're talking about, they like the same shows as me, the movies, the books and whatever. When I'm sick, are they there? Right? When I spiral, can they sit with it? Can they hold my hand when I'm having a hard day? Are they interested in the things that I'm interested in, even if they're not interested in them? Do they listen to me? Like, those are the important things. Because the other shit, like the danger as well, if you're too similar, is the danger is that enmeshment that we talked about before where you end up doing everything together. You know, again, concrete example, if Linda's at a 5-day test match, well, good. I got time to go and see Kirsty and go for a walk on the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to do everything together, then I actually lose my friendships.
Yeah, and you also run out of things to talk to each other about. Like, because you haven't had any extra experiences or whatever. Like, you haven't gone down for a walk on the beach with Kirsty and watched her eat shit in a rock pool. So, therefore, you haven't gotten to go home and tell Linda about how Kirsty had to get airlifted off St Kilda Beach.
Yeah.
And like, but then you've got to go and be experiencing stuff separately to be able to bring something back to the table, which is something that we all talked a lot about during lockdowns and whatever.
Correct.
Because we talked a lot about how we had nothing to talk to our partners about.
Because everyone was doing the same thing. Yes.
Exactly. Like, it was a godsend for me that Elle was still working because she's a nurse.
Yeah.
So she was trotting off to work and, you know, would come home with at least being able to talk about her day.
Mm.
But for me, like for months on end, it was like, I walked the dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the tide was low.
I watered the plants. I picked up a dog poo. But I think coming back to like the big mistake is for a range of reasons, it puts pressure on the other person. It creates unrealistic expectations. You can lose yourself. The big mistake is expecting them to fulfill every need. There needs to be some basics that you write down that are non-negotiables, but don't make that so black and white, and don't make that superficial shit doesn't matter. You know, how many times do we hear, like I get it because there's a lot of conditioning in it. But, you know, I won't date a guy who's shorter than me. Why not? Like, does that really matter? You know, like, actually, we're too old for that shit. Go back to the table and go, is that really important, or is it important how he treats me, how he speaks to me, how he loves me? If he's bloody half a foot shorter, who gives a shit?
Yeah, go have a crack at a short king.
Oh, my God, the other day, we'll finish on this. We're at school waiting to pick up my teenager and my little 11-year-old, who you know is the most fabulous loose unit on the face of the earth. This little kid walked out of school and she went, ooh, short king. I lost it. Love a short king.
She's so funny.
Oh, Webeck, we've gone so far over time. I'm so sorry for keeping you, but I do adore you.
Right back at you.
And I'm going to put links to all the things in the show notes. And I will see you, well, I'll see you beforehand, but for listeners, you can come and see Kirsty at the live show at the Malt House on the 9th of February.
Awesome. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Love you, Dale. Bye.
Love you.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, it's Nelly here, just popping in to remind you to send in your listener calls. Your listener calls are the best, chuck out the rest. You can call me with a question, you can comment on a previous episode, you can give some tips and tricks, you can share a dating story, you can, you know what, you can pretty much do whatever you want. We love, love, love getting your listener calls and questions. All you need to do, there's a link in the show notes, or you just go to my website, nellythomas.com, and follow the links to SpeakPipe. It's super easy. It's this online app. You basically press record. You start talking. When you're finished, it gets emailed to me. So go on, take a chance. Give me a call.